Recently, I received an email which was sent also to several scholarly devotees as follows. I am interested in parallels or distinctions between the verses uttered by Madhavendra Puri involving Mathura Viraha, or that should be Mathura Viraha, and the one by Mahaprabhu and Rupa Goswami at Rathyatra, Kurukshetra Viraha. There seems to be overlap. For example, one, they are both reputed to have originally been uttered by Radhika, and two, they both seem to embody the mood of love in separation, albeit depicting the slightly different moods of Mathura and Kurukshetra. This is a very advanced topic, no doubt. Those who have studied carefully Chaitanya Charitamrita will know what this is about. Madhavendra Puri, just before passing away from this world, uttered a prayer of feeling of separation from Krishna. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at Rathyatra uttered a stanza which appeared to be mundane, but Rupa Goswami understood the purport of it and explained that in another stanza of his own. If you know what we're talking about, you know, and you can continue to listen to this talk, otherwise it might all go above your head. I replied to this, as far as I understand, and of course I stand to be corrected, the overwhelming issue is separation from Krishna and not so much exactly where he is. Vrindavan is everything, and anywhere Krishna goes outside Vrindavan, all generates the same kind of grief. Acharyas might have commented on the nuances of different places, to which I got the reply, there is a difference, and there is technical jargon to confirm this. Rupa Goswami's verse, articulated in response to Mahaprabhu's mysterious stanza at Rathyatra, refers to the divine couple meeting at Kurukshetra, whereas Sri Madhavendra is about their separation as a result of Krishna leaving for Mathura, with Sri Radha feeling his separation in Vrindavan. Thus, Rupa Goswami's verse is technically an instance of a prosperous meeting that takes place after residing in a distant place, with additional bhavi viraha, the anticipation of impending separation, since Krishna will return to Dwaraka and Radha to Vrindavan, that is Kurukshetra. Madhavendra's verse, by contrast, evokes the mood of intentional separation at a long distance, with Sri Radhika being the Proshita Bhatrika Nayika, the heroine whose beloved resides in a distant place. These are subtle but important variations on the pain and bliss of divine separation. Another scholarly devotee pitched in here. There are certainly differences in all these varieties of variations of separation. The term you're looking for is pravas, which is categorized in Ujjvala Nilamani as dura, slightly far, and sudura, very far. There are also differences based on bhavi, separation that is about to occur, bhavan, separation that is currently occurring, and bhuta, separation that has already occurred. This is a very attractive subject. This is the kind of topic that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would discuss with his intimate associates, and which has been the subject of discussion by our Gaurīya Vaiṣṇava acharyas and advanced devotees throughout the ages. It's definitely more learned devotees than myself are more qualified to discuss this subject, but as it is very attractive, I would like to explore it at the level that I may do so. I can't say I'm experiencing the bhava of Radha. Who can say that? Well, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Radha, and Madhavendra Puri, according to Chaitanya Charitamrita. But it is a discussion. It is the point of our discussion for devotees and I will attempt to go in. It may be like a dwarf trying to catch the moon, or a child trying to discuss E equals MC squared. And again, I stand to be corrected. But there are many relishable points that arise from when I was thinking about this more and more. Some very relishable points came up in my mind. Now here it seems that there's some the curse of email, the misunderstanding. When was referred to the slightly different moods of Mathura and Kurukshetra, I took that to mean that the place themselves generate the moods. Well, in one sense, as we've heard, they do, because Mathura is at some distance from Vrindavan and Kurukshetra is at a much further distance. What are we talking about? Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that for the Gauriyas, their main service, or their only service, is to serve the Vrajavasis who are experiencing Mathura Kathura, the pain of, that they feel of separation when Krishna is in Mathura. But my point here is that it's the pain that they feel, and exactly the place. There are variations, no doubt, but exactly the place to the Vrajavasis, it's not the place per se that Krishna is in, but the fact that he's away, that's what hurts them. And also Mathura and Kurukshetra. Mathura has its own bhav in relation to Krishna, which is different to Vrajabhav, but Kurukshetra is not per se a place of bhakti. So when it's stated the different moods of Mathura and Kurukshetra, what was being referred to here is the different moods that are expressed by the Vrajavasis and especially Sri Radha in these verses. But I misunderstood it to mean that the places themselves are conceived of as generating a different mood. And there are differences, there are nuances, but again, for the Vrajavasis, for them the overwhelming fact is that we lost our Krishna. We lost or are losing him. Some example which came to my mind, there's a general category that we can say halava. We can have suji halava, or we can have halava made from chiku sapota. We can have halava made from whole mung, ground whole mung, loki halava. So basically it's the same kind of thing, but there are very specific different flavors according to the ingredients. For those devotees in the West to better understand this, there's a general category called cake, and within that there's cherry cake, all fruit cake, coffee cake, chocolate cake. So they're all basically the same kind of thing, but there are distinct flavors and differences between them. Now, so the question is, does the place generate the mood, or is it what are the gopis feeling? It is, for you eat a cake, you have a certain kind of okay, that's nice. But for the gopis, it hurts wherever it is. They're not particularly interested in the technical terms or the technical differences. For them, it just hurts. Although later, they come, the gopis come, and it's Rupa Goswami, one of the principal gopis, or one of the in the sub level, or Narottam Das sees Rupa Goswami, Rupa Manjari, as the ultimate goal of all his devotional practices, of his very life. So the same Rupa Manjari who's not discussing in Vrindavan, in Vrajalila, about all these technical terms, comes as Rupa Goswami and supplies them. This question, is it the cake which generates the taste, or is the taste perceived? Is it something intrinsic in the person who's tasting it? Or is it the cake itself that generates the taste? So there's an old question, an old discussion, long-standing discussion in the field of dramaturgy, Indian connoisseurs called rasiks, who are expert in discussing rasa. They discuss such points as this. Is it the scene, is it the actors in the drama who generate the ras, or is it something generated in the mind of the devotee? And then Rupa Goswami has analyzed, taking from the bhakti rasa, the transcendental rasa, appearing to build on discussion of ordinary ras, mundane ras, as given by great proponents of this science, such as Bharat Muni, and further commentators and rasiks have discussed all these topics. And then we come to the point of, there are discussions, vibhavs and udipana, that which stimulates rasa. So the seeing Krishna's form, hearing his flute, seeing or even thinking about the river Yamuna, because these are all in relationship to Krishna, they stimulate bhakti rasa. Mm. They stimulate certain feelings in the person who experiences this bhakti rasa. And Krishna himself is the ultimate udipan. He's the source of all rasa. He's Akhila Rasamrita Murti. The very first words of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu of Rupa Goswami state that Krishna is the very form of all rasas. What is that rasa, that experience? It's not exactly that when we say Mathura, the mood of Mathura, well, there are different moods in Mathura. In Vrindavan, of course, everywhere there are different moods. Different devotees experience different moods in relation to Krishna. But in Vrindavan, there's among all living beings, and even the apparently non-living beings, because they're also living, they all have a mood of pure devotion to Krishna, devoid of knowledge of Krishna's opulence. Whereas in Mathura, it's different. So when we speak of the mood of Mathura, well, among the devotees there, there's a general feeling of appreciation of Krishna in his opulence, with knowledge of his opulence. That's among the devotees. But there are non-devotees also, which we don't find in Vrindavan. If they do come to Vrindavan, they soon get bumped off by Krishna and Balaram, the demons who enter. Of course, just at the edge of Vrindavan, there are the brahmanas who are performing yajnas who are not devotional. They can be considered props in the drama that is Krishna's pastimes. They can be considered like props for their wives, who are great devotees. And right in the heart of Krishna's pastimes, they're right there in the heart of it, but they're probably like shadows, the exact term is given. It's almost like they don't exist. The so-called husbands of the gopis, they're there as props. What for the gopis is a source of katara, their very heart is feeling such pain, Krishna's gone to Mathura, that for the women of Mathura is a source of great bliss. Krishna is the same person wherever he is, but he's perceived differently by different people. That's true of even ordinary people. What to speak of Krishna, who is Akhila Rasamrita Murti. Krishna does the same thing. He's in the same, he may be in one place doing the same thing, but he's seen and perceived by different people in different ways. And this is particularly apparent in when there's one verse in the Bhagavatam which demonstrates how Krishna, when he entered the wrestling arena, he was seen by different people differently. Now, before this, when Krishna was in Vrindavan, he was seen by different people differently, but as Srila Prabhupada writes in his Krishna book, in Vrindavan, Krishna was the cynosure of all eyes. Everyone loved Krishna. It wasn't so in Mathura. When Krishna entered Mathura, he wasn't seen by all different kinds of people at different times, when he was just entering and walking in the streets. He did meet different people with different outlooks. He met the wicked washerman who he summarily executed on the spot. He met Kubja, who is, interestingly, among the young women of Mathura, the only one who's mentioned in the Bhagavatam by name is Kubja, the young woman. And she had feelings of Krishna which were more like material lust, which got converted. And then Krishna met Sudama, the florist, who is a great devotee. But it wasn't until he came into the wrestling arena that there were all kinds of different people there with all kinds of different attitudes toward Krishna. And that is described in the Bhagavatam, in this verse. Malanam ashaniya nirnang naravara Srinam smaro murtiman gopanam svajano satang shiti bhujang shastas vapitro shishuhu mrityur bhojapate virarda vidusham tatvang param yoginam vishinam paradevate tividito rangam gata sagrajaha. Here's the English translation of this verse, as given in the BBT edition of Srimad Bhagavatam. The various groups of people in the arena regarded Krishna in different ways when he entered it with his elder brother, Balaram. The wrestlers saw Krishna as a lightning bolt, the men of Mathura as the best of males, the women as Cupid in person, the cowherd men as their relative, the impious rulers as a chastiser, his parents as their child, the king of the bhojas, that's Kamsa, as death, the unintelligent as the Supreme Lord's universal form, the yogis as the absolute truth, and the vrishnis as their supreme worshipable deity. Now I'm going to read some more about how, elaborating on this, how the different people, the devotees and the non-devotees, saw Krishna. And different acharyas, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Rupa Goswami himself, and Bhaktisthan Saraswati Thakur, they've commented on this verse in various ways about how the different people saw Krishna in different ways. Bhaktivinoda Thakur remarks that this verse gives a clue as to the different rasas in which devotees of different points of view relate to the Lord, not only devotees, even non-devotees. But it's the rasas of the non-devotees, it's not exactly rasa. It's definitely not bhakti rasa. Some kind of rasa is there, some kind of experience is there. So it is possible to experience Krishna, who is absolutely spiritual, in a mundane way. That is discussed a little bit here by the different acharyas, and in elsewhere in their Bhagavatam commentaries and elsewhere in more detail. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that in this verse, the yogis are seen to be representatives of Shantaras, the Vrishnis of Dasyaras, and the cowherd boys Sakyaras mixed with Hasyaras, the sub-mellow of comedy. You may think, well, where's the comedy here? Well, for the cowherd boys, this is not Bhaktivinoda Thakur, I'm just elaborating as from some of the acharyas. For the cowherd boys, everything's fun. Just like when Aghasura came, the cowherd boys thought, oh, it's some fun, let's all go in the mouth and see what happens. Everything for them is full of jokes, hasya pariharsha sambhasana. It's not only the cowherd boys, and among Krishna and the gopis also. So they thought, well, this is some fun. We didn't get this in Vrindavan. Krishna's dressed up in all these fine clothes, this different style, because Krishna had the day before taken the clothes which the washerman was bringing to the Rajaka, the cloth dyer was bringing for Kamsa. Krishna apportioned them for himself, so he's wearing all these fancy, then he had the tailor make them. And so Krishna looked to them somewhat funny, and then he's got this elephant tusk, he's entering the wrestling arena with the elephant tusk spattered with blood and himself spattered with blood. And for them, it looked funny. To others, it looked horrible, but to them, it looked funny. So in this way, the cowherd men, headed by Nanda Maharaj, exemplify Vatsalya Ras and Karuna Ras, the sub-mellow of compassion. The ladies exhibit Madhurya Rasa, some of them, not all of them. Some of them means the older ladies, they're more in Vatsalya Ras. And then the ladies of Mathura, well, one acharya says that they have this sentiment of loving, praying for Krishna. Others say that, well, there are some of them, it was mixed with a somewhat more material outlook. The wrestlers exhibit Virya Rasa, but again, that's not the Virya Rasa of Bhishma Dev, for instance. It is Virya Rasa, just that can be experienced in the material world also. Krishna's not part of the material world, but the wrestlers see him like that. They see him as something material, while the people in general are examples of Adbhuta Rasa, the sub-mellow of wonder. The kings exhibit Rodra Rasa, that's the kings who are inimical to Krishna, friends of Kamsa, the sub-mellow of anger, and the bhojas, headed by Kamsa, exemplify Bhayanaka Rasa, the sub-mellow of fear. The worldly-minded, the foolish people who don't know of Krishna's opulences, they neither know of his opulences, as the Vrishnis do, nor do they love him. So they just see him as just some other guy. Just someone else. He's pretty amazing kid, but basically he's part of the material world. So they see him as the universal form, and they relate to him in vibhatsa rasa, the submellow of gassiness. In this way, Krishna is the supreme object of the five principal and seven secondary rasas. For this reason, he is known as Akhila Rasamrita Murti, or the embodiment of all transcendental mellows. And in fact, there are innumerable possibilities, innumerable realizations, innumerable ways that Krishna can be related to by the innumerable living beings that exist, and their basic relationship to him, their sthayi bhav, that's going to be different with everyone. When we say there are five principal rasas, it's not that everyone has the... Every single gopi who loves Krishna, we call that Madhurya rasa. It's not exactly they don't perceive him in exactly the same way as any other gopi, and that's what makes the fun. And Krishna loves that. Everyone is different. Krishna himself loves rasa. He is Rasika Sheka. He's the best connoisseur of all different rasas. Krishna loves that, and he loves seeing all different people. And he also enjoys fighting with the wrestlers who see him materially. So they see him materially, but for him, it's all pleasure. And not exactly the same pleasure as, it's definitely not the same kind of pleasure that the gopis get from kissing him. The gopis also inflict pain on him, that Vishwanathacharya Thakur discusses, when they bite him. In kissing, there's biting, so that inflicts pain, but that gives a different kind of pleasure to the wrestlers who are also trying to inflict pain on Krishna. But Krishna also finds pleasure in that. It wasn't that Krishna just clicked his fingers and the wrestlers fell down dead. They were fighting, and the wrestlers were also locking with Krishna. They also inflicted some pain on him, but that is for Krishna pleasure, because he enjoys fighting. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that innumerable varieties of realizations, such as found in verses like Malanam Ashaneya Nurnam, are possible only in him. That's Akhila Rasamrita Murti. Jiva Goswami, Preeti Sandarbha, also quotes this to say that there, even in Krishna, there are contradictory ways of seeing him, which is again true for an ordinary person, and then how much the more so for Krishna. Contradictory ways of seeing him. Some see him as friend, some see him as enemy. Let's picture the scene. Krishna, he's been heard about. In Mathura, people have been hearing about Krishna, getting news from Vrindavan, just a little distance away. They keep on hearing about this Krishna. There's some boy over there, and all these great, powerful personalities go there and get killed by him. And we hear about that, and we hear about how even demigods go to visit him. We hear about how the gopis love him. So the news trickles through or filters through to Mathura. The people of Mathura, they saw Krishna, Mathura and surrounding districts, they saw Krishna in the wrestling arena. Most of them saw him for the first time, but they'd heard so much about him. And some, by hearing about him, became very attracted to him. And others, hearing about him reinforced their enmity toward him. That was definitely true in the case of Kamsa. The more he heard about Krishna, it should happen that the more we hear about Krishna, the more we love Krishna, but he came to hate him more and more and more. So Krishna just enters, and it would look ghastly, normally speaking, if a young boy it is spattered with blood. He spattered with blood from the blood of the elephant Kuvalayapura, who he just killed, and he was carrying the tusk of the elephant on his shoulder, which is that's dripping with blood. So it looks pretty nasty, but not to everyone. Not everyone saw it like that. It's a pretty dramatic entrance, isn't it? Krishna walks in unconcerned, having killed this mighty elephant. He wasn't any ordinary elephant. He was a very extremely powerful demon who was in the form of an elephant. And already the news had gone around. Krishna, the day before, was wandering around Mathura, killed this washerman, just went walked around nonchalantly as if the enforcers, the police of Kamsa weren't there, just acted completely as he liked, showing himself to be this supremely independent and didn't give a damn about this Kamsa, who everyone was so afraid of, which was again a warning for Kamsa that this Krishna's come, he's not in the slightest bit afraid of me or of anyone else. So this Krishna is entering, and different people saw him in different ways. The wrestlers, it said that they saw him as a thunderbolt. Specifically, it's described that these wrestlers with their very hard bodies, they like to wrestle. And they saw a little boy, Krishna, and they don't fight with little boys, but they knew, as Chanara said to Krishna, that you're not any ordinary little boy. We know that you wrestle in Vrindavan, but you're not just any ordinary little boy who plays in the forest and wrestles. You are an apt match for us. Normally the wrestlers wouldn't fight with little boys. It would be below their dignity, apart from it being not proper according to dharma, because even the wrestlers have their dharma. They wouldn't fight with little boy, but they knew he was not just any ordinary little boy. He was very powerful. He killed so many demons. And although his body looked very soft, when they engaged with him, when they grappled with him, Krishna's body felt as hard as a thunderbolt. And again, not every wrestler might have brought into his mind that particular metaphor, that Krishna's a thunderbolt. They might not have thought like that, although among themselves, no doubt among wrestlers, that term is used a lot, because the hardest thing, the very solid and strongest thing known in the world of fighting, is especially the thunderbolt of Indra. So it's very hard, and it can pierce anything and smash anything and break mountains. So the wrestlers they wanted to make their bodies like a thunderbolt, very hard. So that metaphor is used for wrestlers. Nrinang Naravaraha, the ordinary men of Mathura, who were the pious men, they may not have been very closely attached to, or very, very strongly attracted to Krishna. But because they were pious, they appreciated his good qualities. Krishna's is something very special. And they thought of him as, oh, he's the best of human beings. Strinam Smaro Murtiman. For the women, and again, there's not all women, but in general, Krishna, this is one of his qualities, listed by Rupa Goswami and Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he is attractive to all women. So the younger women, that because Krishna, he's a young boy, but he looks older than his years, and he acts older than his years. So he was very attractive to the young women, who saw him to be like, he's Cupid, he is the Kamadev, he is the one who incites desire by his beauty and everything about him, here he is personally present. It was a great festival for them. Gopanam Swajanaha, the cowherd men of Vrindavan, so he's one of us. They loved him in that way, as one of us. Mamata, he's one of us, he's ours. This strong feeling, he's one of us. They didn't see him as being, he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that is this mamata, this sense he is ours, that is a very strong sense in Vrindavan. So we speak of Rajabhav, Rajaprem, but not exactly in Mathura. Krishna's come from outside. Krishna's come from outside. They don't have that. And again, in Mathura, there are different kinds of people, not only devotees. So in Mathura, definitely it's an eternal dhamma of the Lord, which is praised. Rupa Goswami is taking from various Puranas and Shastras, has made his Mathura Mahatmya. So Mathura, which, well, there are two ways of seeing Mathura. One way is Mathura as separate from Vrindavan, another including Vrindavan in Mathura. So these are all technical nuances and so on. But again, getting to the point of these original email exchanges, what I wanted to say is that Vrindavan itself has a certain general bhava associated with it. And that is also there in Dwarka, but Mathura is a bit mixed because there is the same bhava as Vrindavan, not exactly, it hasn't become as established as Dwarka, where Krishna is married with all his queens. But there's the Vrishnis are there in Mathura, they're devotees, but there are non-devotees also. Mm. So, Asatam Shithibhujam Shasta, the rascal kings who were allies of Kamsa, who sided with Kamsa, they saw Krishna as someone who's come to punish us. Vinashayata Dushkritam. Krishna comes to punish such people. So they didn't like Krishna. They weren't happy to see him. Some were delighted to see Krishna. Others were not at all. Svapitro Shishuhu. Vasudev and Devaki specifically, and others on the same level, they saw him, a little boy, our little boy, specifically our little boy, Vasudeva and Devaki, our little child, baby child. Then Mrityur Bhojapate, hey, for the king of the Bhojas, namely Kamsa, they saw Krishna as death. This is the one who was predicted to kill me. Now I have seen him for the first time. I've been thinking of him. Now I'm seeing him. And seeing him, to see you is to love you. That is generally in relation to Krishna. But for Kamsa, to see you is to not see you because my seeing will be stopped. I'll be killed. He saw him as death. Then Virad Avidusham, the persons who are ignorant saw Krishna, Virat, it refers to the universal form. So it's not that Krishna displayed the universal form there, but it means to say that they saw the people who were just ignorant and they had no particular feeling toward Krishna, no particular regard for him. They just thought, well, he's just part of the whole cosmos. He's just something else material. Tatvamparam yoginam, and the yogis saw him as the highest principle, the ultimate truth. They may say, well, yogis, they don't go to wrestling matches. Who's that? The commentators have said, Yeah, but you know, with Krishna, there's Krishna, right? So great yogis, persons like the four Kumaras, they could be watching Krishna from the sky, and they see Krishna like that. Rishinam Paradevata, the Vrishnis, they saw him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead with love. So in this way, Krishna was seen by different persons. Krishna came as a wrestler into the wrestling arena, and it was a wrestling match arranged, and Krishna was the, he was the first, he was on the first batch. He was the star of the show. Chanura and Mushtika, they were the stars of the show from one side, and on the other side, Krishna and Balaram. But no one saw them principally as wrestlers. Krishna was a wrestler in this instance, but they all saw him in different ways. Where Vasudeva and Devaki didn't think, oh, here's a wrestler, or my son is now a wrestler. No, he's my son. He's wrestling, but he's my son. They didn't see him principally. Now, they all had different feelings toward Krishna. One thing is that it's, although we hear of Shanta Rasa, it's very difficult to be indifferent to Krishna. He invokes feelings, strong feelings in everyone, either positive or negative, to give a perverted reflection of how this is true, how this can be true. I'll mention the name of a person who's very famous at the time I'm speaking this, and in a few years will probably be largely forgotten. The name is Donald Trump. And he invokes in people, many people think he's great, and many people think he's the worst thing that ever happened. But people are generally not very neutral toward him. If you know about him, he either tends to invoke feelings of strong support or strong approval or strong disapproval. So that's just a material example. Krishna's not the, he's a very effusive, effulgent personality, and he invokes strong feelings in people. And especially Krishna wants to invoke love, feelings of love. Now, who feels the most for Krishna? You'd think it must be Devaki. His mother is there. Who loves someone more than his mother? Even the wife's love is very hard to say. Of course, nowadays, wives generally don't love their husbands to the extent that they used to. They may do so, but it's not like it was before. That's a cultural factor. And probably mothers don't love children the way they used to because everyone's diverted by personal sense gratification. So as the calm, material, personal desire increases, atendriya priti vancha, then the love goes down. And that's true even on the material platform. But who loved Krishna the most? It was the gopis, no doubt. So the gopis, the Mathura women, they loved him. They had feelings of rati or sexual attraction to Krishna. Of course, this is on the spiritual platform. It's not to be equated with that on the material platform, although the acharyas say that there were women in Mathura who were also feeling attraction to Krishna on the material platform, and Kubja was the prime example of that. So the gopis are not there in the wrestling arena, but they're feeling Krishna more, even not seeing him. This is called Mathura Katura or Mathura Viraha. They are not there, but they're feeling his absence more than the delighted women of Mathura are feeling his presence for the very first time. The gopis were always aware there are some women over there, and they're very afraid that if Krishna goes to Mathura, then the very sophisticated, beautiful women of Mathura will capture Krishna. They'll kidnap him by their charms. And then why would Krishna want to come back to us? But from the women of Mathura, from their side, they knew about Krishna and the gopis. We'll find right here in this section of Bhagavatam, the women of Mathura, they're saying, oh, how fortunate the gopis are that they always see Krishna. Because as far as they're concerned, as far as they know, Krishna's just come here. He's going to go back to Vrindavan. That was the general, that was what was generally thought at the time. That's what Krishna had said. Krishna, he only came to visit, and presumably he's going to go back. So although he got entangled there. The women of Mathura said, oh, how fortunate are the gopis. They always see Krishna, and they can always see him and hear his flute. They had great appreciation. Even the older gopis, the older women of Mathura, they appreciated the older gopis who also regularly saw Krishna and interacted with him. But it dragged on, didn't it? Krishna got stuck in Mathura. He had some duty to his, what we would, if it wasn't Krishna Leela, call his biological parents. And then he went and he became a regular member of the Kshatriya order by having his Upanayanam performed and getting an education. And then there's all this business of Jarasandha attacking. And this news must have been going back to Vrindavan. And when the gopis in Vrindavan heard, we'll find in the Bhagavatam it's described, Jarasandha came. When he was just attacking, just arriving with all his forces outside Mathura, then Krishna and Balaram, who were thinking how to counteract this attack of Jarasandha, what happened? From the sky came Krishna's and Balaram's chariots and weapons and chariot drivers. This means now with Krishna had been fighting with individuals like Chanura and Kamsa, and previous to that Keshi and Arishta, so many demons in Vrindavan. Now this was wholesale attack by thousands and thousands of men, and Krishna was preparing to kill them. And now the gopis, they know, oh. Now Krishna has fully taken on his Vasudeva feature, by which he resides outside Vrindavan for the purpose of vinashayata dushkritam. And yes, paritranaya sadhunam. This uplifting the devotees goes on to the superlative degree in Vrindavan. And to some extent, there is also vinashayata dushkritam. But outside Vrindavan, although definitely the paritranaya sadhunam, uplifting the devotees, goes on, but it's not comparable to the moods of Vrindavan. And the prominent, very prominent, or the necessary feature of Krishna being in the world at this time is his killing so many demons. So when Krishna's chariot and his weapons came, that means he's fully moved into that mode. Oh, that's not good news for the residents of Vrindavan. But still, they always maintain hope. That hope keeps them alive. And even when they went to Kurukshetra, they went all the way to Kurukshetra. And there Krishna, he's married to so many wives, he has so many children, he's fully in that situation. He's changed, he's not the Krishna that they knew. But they don't know any other Krishna. and their hope was alive is impossible. Come back to Vrindavan. Just forget all this and come back to Vrindavan. It's impossible. You can't turn the time back. You can't unring a bell. Certain things have happened and there's nothing you can do about it. But still the gopis had the hope, and the Rath Yatra symbolizes how Radharani at least for some time dragged Krishna from Kurukshetra back to Vrindavan. But that is the feeling of separation there in Kurukshetra. We got Krishna, but it's hopeless. It's hopeless, but still there's a little hope. I can't forget Vrindavan. You can't forget Vrindavan. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as in the mood of Radharani, when Jagannath stopped, then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, no one could pull him further, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, symbolically putting his head at the back of the rat, pushed it. But actually, it was the power of his love forced Jagannath, who could not be brought in any other way, forced him to continue toward Gundicha. And there for some time, he enjoys again. And then again, he goes back. But there's always another year, and every moment, yugayatam nimeshena chakshusha pravrishayata shunyayatam jagat sarvam govinda virahename. But the Rath Yatra shows that the power of love conquers Krishna even more than the opulence. So in Paramatma Sandarbha, I'm taking one quote which justifies my position. That it's not the place so much as the feelings of the devotees. And this kind of thing can be argued back and forth in a very relishable way by those who are qualified to do so. That, yeah, Paramatma Sandarbha, no, was it Paramatma? Yeah, Jiva Goswami, no, Paramatma, must be Preetis. Anyway. The residents of Vrindavan, they see Swajanam, Krishna, he's one of us. We are his, he is ours. Now this feeling never wavers in the people of Raja, as it does with the Vrishnis and Kamsa. Kamsa never thinks like that, but the Vrishnis think he's one of us. But sometimes they think, oh, he's the Supreme Lord. Sometimes the residents of Vrindavan think, yeah, seems like Krishna. Yeah, it seems like he's the Supreme Lord. Wow, isn't that amazing? Apart from being our friend, he's also the Supreme Lord. Wow, what do you think about that? That's amazing, isn't it? So they, even if they see him as the Supreme Lord, they see that as being secondary to his being one of them. Whereas if you're more philosophical or more realistic, you can say, then Krishna's being the Supreme Lord puts him in a different category altogether. And the residents of Vrindavan see him as a different category altogether, but not because of his opulence, but because, well, there's no because they don't even think about all these things. They're not philosophers. They simply love Krishna. So this Vrajaras, it's this feeling toward Krishna in Vrindavan, it's the eternal principle within Vrindavan, it's Krishna Prema. There is Mathura Ras also, that Mathura Katara of the gopis, Krishna's gone, the pain, Krishna's gone to Mathura. It's specific to a certain time and a certain incident experienced by the Vraja gopis. For the gopis, the separation hurts. They're not analyzing it in various ways. So that's the point. I wanted to make so the scholars can correct me. And anyway, it was from my side, it was pleasing to meditate from my very unqualified position on all these topics. And as I've had the audacity to record all this, and others may also share in the enjoyment and the wonder and the wonder, the feelings of servitude, the feelings of friendship, the feelings of protective love, and the feelings of intimate, most intimate love, we can also share in that in a vicarious way by hearing about Krishna and his pastimes. So there are many, many devotees much more qualified to speak on these things, but by the grace of Srila Prabhupada and our acharyas, I'm also have some allowance to do so. They want it. The acharyas come to this world to teach us all these things so that we can start to discuss all these things also. Hare Krishna. Vancha kalpa tarubhyas chakripa sindhu bhyavacha patita nam pavane bhyo vaishnave bhyo namo namaha. A little afterward, just to clarify, and I hope make it completely clear, in this talk, in and around all the various things I was waffling about, my point that I was trying to make is that the experience of rasa is individual for each individual. And although the place and the objects and Krishna himself, they generate different reactions in different people, and even the same person in the same place may generate a different reaction in the same person in different times, the rasa is experienced by the person. It's not entirely connected with the place. So when we say Mathura Viraha, it's not exactly that the feeling of separation is itself a feature of the place of Mathura as that which is experienced by the residents of Vrindavan in their contemplation of Mathura. So I hope it doesn't come across that I'm trying to contradict the devotees the learned devotees who were, after all, quoting Ujjvala Nilamani. Who am I to say? There's no question of me trying to contradict. I mean, if I'm at all even slightly sane, trying to contradict Rupa Goswami, I'm just simply offering a different angle as how I understood the question was pitched in the first place. Hare Krishna.